me tell you a story. Once upon a time, there was a congregation in the Midwest who was very, very happy. They loved their congregation, they loved their ministers, and they loved each other. One day, one of the ministers announced that he, even though he loved them, he would be leaving them. He would take an entire year to say goodbye, but at the end of the year, he would no longer be their minister. He would be moving out of state, and he wouldn't be in touch with them any longer because the relationship had changed. It was a hard year of saying goodbye, but they loved him and his family and wanted the best for him, so they said goodbye really well, tearfully, wonderfully well. In the meantime, they did what congregations do when a minister leaves. They formed an interim search committee, and they created a packet of information. They interviewed prospective interim ministers. They made their choice, and by June of 2015, they had nobody willing to come. The search team didn't know what to do next. They asked for help from their regional consultant, who happened to be spending the weekend with two co-ministers who were serving their last year in Cleveland, Ohio. She said, "Don't each of you work half-time? Would you be willing to serve each half-time interim minister and half-time in Cleveland for the 2015-2016 year?" The ministers didn't know what to say. All they knew about Wisconsin was that they had really bad winters and really good cheese. And they were in the midst of saying goodbye to their beloved congregation. How could they split their time, their minds, their hearts to be two places at once? Yet, something more than just the minister's savior complex or desire for more income kicked in. Something else beckoned. They didn't know what it was at the time because it looked like a whole lot of work and it wasn't what they had planned for that year. What was that something else? Well, it's probably pretty clear to those of you who've been here for the past 2 years that the story I'm telling is, of course, your story. The story of how you began a relationship, first with Reverend Wayne Arneson and me for that first year of the interim, and then with me as your senior interim minister for this second year. It's a story that has many highs and lows, from the high of the happiness that you shared over many years with Reverend Roger Birchhausen, to a low of feeling like, well, why doesn't any minister want us? To a cautious optimism of welcoming Reverend Wayne and me, to the warm embrace of my ministry with you this past year, and then to the ecstasy of having your first choice of ministers choose you, and you choose her. It has been quite a roller coaster, hasn't it? And throughout these 2 years of the interim ministry, I've heard some of you say, I just want everything to go back to normal. I just want everything to stop changing. Right. I know. I do. I understand that completely. I really do. If I were to do an emotional map of your congregation, it would whipsaw between these extreme highs and lows. But then, you know, I think somewhere last fall, sometime around the ordination of Reverend Jim Coakley in November, that we began to settle into a rhythm that felt like a new normal. And I noticed something shifting in the mood of the congregation. It looked and it felt like happiness. So this sermon is the story of your happiness, and mine too, as we conclude this time together. And my job in the next 6 weeks is to be available to you for pastoral and administrative needs, but it is also to end well, to finish up what I can, to avoid starting anything new, and to leave behind nothing but a notebook full of notes for Reverend Christina and a clean office that is move-in ready. And I am donating for her, to her, as my gift, my two cheese hats to start off her ministry here in Wisconsin. You know, every interim minister has 5 interim tasks, and you've heard me preach about them before. They are coming to terms with the congregation's history, discovering a new identity, allowing needed leadership change, renewing denominational ties, and committing to new directions in ministry. And throughout the course of these 2 years, I've had my eye on all five of these. I believe that our first year was more about looking at your history and discovering a new identity. And the second year was more about leadership change, denominational connections, and finally committing to new direction in ministry with the calling of your new senior settled minister. So I want to look briefly at these areas as a way of telling the story of your current and future happiness. But first, we have to look back a little bit. Before Wayne and I came to the fellowship as your interim co-ministers, we heard about the story of your fellowship from your former senior minister himself, Roger Birchhausen, because Roger was part of a gathering called SMOLIC, Senior Ministers of Large UU Churches, that meet every year. And on the last night that Roger was to be a member of the group, because once you leave being a senior minister, you also leave the group, his colleagues asked him to tell the story of the Fox Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. He put together a narrative for us that told of your humble beginnings before the Moose Lodge. And by the way, the colleagues decided to add some pantomime. So every time he talked about the Moose Lodge, they went like this. The Moose Lodge. He told the story of how the place kept growing. He told the story of the sacred wall of coffee cups, of the joys of concerns, the congregational response of moving to this location where you at one time had to have four services because your space was small and you were growing. We heard about how you held a capital campaign and created this beautiful space and renovated your building. We heard about dear members now gone. We heard about the ministries of Reverend Dottie Matthews and interim associate Jason Seymour and of the calling of Reverend Leah Hart Landsberg. We heard about Roger's sadness about leaving and his happiness that his wife Amy would finally be able to fully follow her passion in ministry. And when we came here, we realized that one of the reasons this congregation and Roger were such a good fit is because that your identities suited each other so well. Roger was laid back and kind, just like you. You were ambitious and smart, just like Roger. And it's natural that a minister, when a minister has been in place for a long time, the congregation tends to mirror that minister's strengths and weaknesses and vice versa. And it's natural when an interim comes in, someone who's very different than the previous minister, that a congregation starts to question its identity. Who are we? So I was not surprised when a member approached me on a Sunday morning in the fall of 2015 and she said, "You know, I woke up this morning and I was so mad at you. I was so mad at you, I didn't want to come to the fellowship today." And I took a deep breath and I wondered, "Oh God, what did I do?" And then she said, "And I realized I was mad at you because you weren't Roger." And we both laughed about it as she realized that the identity of the fellowship was changing and that she was changing too. And it was uncomfortable and it was okay all at the same time. Isn't that just like life? I mean, we know this intellectually. We know that, for example, the child who adores us now may rebel against us later. And that same child will be packing up her belongings and going away to college or around the globe or couch surfing with friends. We hope that the spouse whom we love will live forever. We love our routines and our habits and our relationships, and we want them to stay the same because it affirms our life and the identity we've created. But you know, if we stop to think about it, the also know that some of our greatest learnings have come from our most challenging times, times that usually involve change. Each stage of our lives requires us to reassess our identity. The identity we fashion for ourselves in our 20s is unlikely to be the same one we have in our 40s. So our identity can be transient, but our core values, what the Buddhists like to call the face we had before we were born, those are permanent, or as permanent as anything in this life can be. So the identity of the fellowship was challenged by Roger's departure as you began to look more deeply at who you were apart from his ministry. And that's what an interim does. We bring to you our own identities, our quirks, our ways of ministering. We serve as both a foil and a mirror for you so that you can see who you are and in turn represent yourselves fairly and well to your possible senior minister candidate. So together, we looked at those things that you claimed as part of your identity. When Wayne and I had the State of the Fellowship service in February of 2016, boy, did we hear about some of those things. We learned a lot about you. It was wonderful. We learned that you like informality. We discovered that you really enjoy having coffee in the sanctuary. We learned you weren't keen on God language all that much. And many of you said, both verbally and in writing, that if I abandoned the congregational response, there would be a mutiny. So, you know, that was obviously, you know, something very important about the symbolism of these things, the symbols of the fellowship, and you wanted us to know them and to respect them. You were worried about a minister coming in and changing some of those things. At the same time, I contend that these things are not at the core of who the fellowship is. If you didn't have coffee in your sanctuary, and yes, if you did not have congregational response every week, it would not change the essence of who you are and what you stand for. Those things, those other things are transient. What's permanent are the values you uphold and the courageous stands you continue to take both in and beyond these walls. I think the first time I really saw your true colors was when the Black Lives Matter banner was stolen for the third, fourth time, lost count. And I know I've mentioned this story to some of you before, but last July, it was Marie Luna who suggested that we have some kind of dedication ceremony to rehang a new banner. Well, I jumped on that suggestion and quickly put together a small ceremony of rededication, expecting that maybe 25 or 30 of you would show up on a Friday night to rededicate the banner. Between members of the fellowship and the community, there were almost 200 of you on that hot Friday night, bringing your children and your courage to stand together in support of a new Black Lives Matter sign. I think the other more recent moment when you literally showed your true colors was when you voted to become a sanctuary congregation at the annual meeting. This sea of yellow cards affirming your insistence on justice, equity, and fairness for immigrants. So if you remember, too, this year was story year. And the intent was that each month there would be a story, at least one sermon, that answered the question, tell me a story about a time when you faced your fears, a time when you were born again. And so throughout this year, we have been hearing each other's stories. Some of those stories you've heard from the worship leaders here in this pulpit, and others during coffee hour. We heard stories about the fear of becoming a new parent, of struggling with depression, of encountering and confronting racism and ableism, of learning something new about oneself. I heard stories from you about your wounded religious past, about your ambivalence with religious language, about your joy, of being able to express your faith in this place, some of you for perhaps the first time. All kinds of stories, all rich with detail and resonating with truth, your truth. As a result of this emerging, changing identity, new leaders have begun to emerge, and some leaders who have been positions for a long time have stepped down and are looking for new places for their talents. And you are countering the trend that is happening in many Protestant churches, which instead of getting older and grayer, you're getting younger. And that is not to say that old is bad, of course, or gray is bad. Because we are doing the sacred work of holding each other through our lifespan, through all the cycles of birth and death and everything that lies in between. But what is happening here, you should really just sort of take this in, is that young families are coming and bringing their children, and as a result, most of your board members for the next year are 40 years of age or younger. And many of them have young children in religious education. Yes, I got a witness there. A shout out. Thank you. And I'm telling you, if this trend continues, you're going to need to expand your building, especially the religious education wing. And it is a great problem to have, one that makes you the envy of many of our congregations who are unable to attract the next generation of members to Unitarian Universalism. You know, when Wayne and I were looking at Wisconsin in general and Appleton in particular, both of us scratched our heads and said, so why is there a 700-member UU church in Appleton, Wisconsin? What gives? Well, what gives is that it didn't take long for me to figure out you are the best liberal religious game in town. I mean, there are other liberal religious congregations in this city, but there is no other UU church or fellowship able to provide the services that you provide close by. It is your strength, and it is your Achilles heel, in that it's easy to feel disconnected from the larger movement of Unitarian Universalism out here in the glorious prairies. And they are glorious. They really are. So what these 2 years have done is to help you engage more deeply with your denomination and its resources. I announced this at the annual meeting, but I am also pleased to say that after many, many years of struggle, you finally, this year, are now paying full fair share dues to the UUA and to the Mid-America region. Yes. That is a vision and a hope that Roger and you put forth years ago, and I'm so proud of you for making it happen. So, now, what's next? You've looked at your history, your identity, developed new leaders, renewed denominational ties, you called your next senior minister. What's left? Well, plenty. Well, you will have the continuity of your staff, and Reverend Leah, your new minister, Reverend Christina, will bring yet more change. She'll bring her own perspective on worship, on social justice, her own loves and passions. You'll fall in love with each other. You'll get mad at her at some point, and she'll be mad or be disappointed with you. She'll make mistakes. You'll make mistakes. You'll move past that. You'll grow. You'll discover new parts of your identity as a congregation that you didn't know that you had, that you can't know right now. Your children will grow up. They'll go through OWLS and coming of age and bridging, and they'll fly away. Some of them may come back, bringing their children. Some won't, but they'll bring their own memories of the fellowship into congregations. Some will stay here at the fellowship until Reverend Christina or Reverend Leah does their memorial service. Some will leave the fellowship because it is changing. It is not the place that they encountered 25 years ago. You'll miss them. You'll wish them well. You'll be challenged by this new ministry. You'll be amazed by how much you've grown and how deep your spiritual well has become. You'll find yourself teaching others and serving on committees and joyfully pouring coffee and giving thanks each time money is taken out of your account, which goes towards your monthly pledge to the fellowship. And next year, you raise your pledge again, not out of guilt, but out of sheer happiness, knowing that what you found here is indeed unique and precious and unlike anything else in your life. It's here where you shape a life. It's here where you get to share the story of your happiness. I felt really blessed to be part of this happiness, because I can honestly say that, much to my surprise, this year has been one of the happiest in my own ministry. I've loved living here, and I have loved serving you. I have deeply appreciated working with such a fine colleague, the Reverend Leah Hart Landsberg, and the amazing staff that I get to work with every day. Gems, I know you know this about your staff, but the passionate dedication and utter professionalism of Marie Luna, the enormous creativity of Jay Thomas, the devoted commitment of Kim Hartman and Eve Rosera, the thoughtful wisdom of Phyllis Schmidt and before her Siri Witt, the joyful service of Cindy Polakowski, the selfless volunteerism of Debbie Plachinski, and last year, the quietly efficient Teresa Hanna, all who worked or worked behind the scenes to make this place hum and run. And then there's all of you who have gone beyond being nice to your interim, to a genuine sense of affection and care that has made ministering here a true pleasure. So while I'm not happy to be leaving, I am really happy that you are all well on your way to the next chapter of your life. And like the author of this morning's reading, that poem, Fear of Happiness, I am leaping off into the unknown this fall, taking the fall off to write and to reflect on three questions. Where did I come from? Meaning, what are my ancestral roots? Who am I to God, and who is God to me? And where am I going? And tomorrow morning, bright and early, we're driving half of our belongings down to Charlottesville, Virginia, where we own a home and where we plan to live for now. And there may be some churches opening up in January that I'm interested in, and I expect to do another interim next year. But for now, I'm in the same position that you were when we began this journey together. You didn't know where your next senior interim minister would come from. You didn't know if you'd like that person or welcome whatever she or he would bring. And I certainly didn't know anything about Wisconsin or Appleton or you. And look at where we are now. So this represents my first solo senior interim ministry, and I've learned so much from you. I will take with you your joy, your affection, your gratitude, your wisdom, your courage, your commitment, and your deep faith, though some of you may not call it that. I thank you for the many ways in which all of the things I've just said have brought out the best in my ministry. I always say that a minister is only as good as the congregation they serve, because you bring out the best. And I am so glad to know that the story of your happiness has not ended, for in fact, it is simply another chapter that has begun. Blessings to you on your present and future happiness.